Welcome to the Specialty Pharmacy Podcast, your prescription for specialty pharmacy success. Now, here's your host, globally recognized industry leader and CEO of CSI Specialty Group, Suzette DiMasio.
Hi, this is Suzette DiMasio with the Specialty Pharmacy Podcast. And today I have the pleasure of introducing you to Carlos Alfaris, who is the president and CEO of Gensco Pharmaceutical. A little bit different there as a manufacturer versus a provider. So Carlos, tell me a little bit about yourself and your organization at Gensco.
Well, thank you, Suzette. That was a very nice introduction. First, about myself, I've been in the pharma industry just about my entire life. My family has been a part of healthcare since I was born. So I've seen many different changes in the almost 50 years of my life. And Gensco Pharma, we are a growing pharmaceutical company that has some incredible platforms for pharmaceutical delivery and wants to better patients' lives every day.
That's fantastic. Because at the end of the day, if you're in healthcare and you're not doing something to contribute to the overall good and impact on a patient's journey, you shouldn't be in my humble opinion.
Absolutely.
You know, tell us a little bit about some of the products that you distribute to patients and the methods in which you distribute them, because it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, thank you. So first of all, we actually acquired Gensco Pharma about a little over 5 years ago because of some intellectual property that a couple of scientists had developed. And we took that and just expanded it into over 23 patents today, centered upon transdermal therapies. So in our mind, we would like to create products that actually help patients much more than hurt them, as opposed to many of the oral therapies and even infused therapies that we see on the market today.
That's great. And also with the changes in the world of compounding, it's a much easier distribution method for the patients.
Absolutely. And again, we have different platforms that create either more of a local effect and also some that are more of a systemic effect. And the transdermal market today is well over $30 billion. So from that point, you can see that there's some super interest in the numbers. But the compounded growth, it could be close to $100 billion in the next 10 years.
Wow.
So it's very interesting. We're not the only ones that have really looked at this, but I believe we are in the forefront.
That's fantastic. So, you know, there's so much going on in the marketplace now. And, you know, one day we see Congress saying that the villains in the world are pharma, and the next day it's the health plans. And, gosh, pretty soon they're going to go back to McDonald's and say it's because of what you're feeding people. So at every given day, someone else is in the spotlight. Where do you see the direction of pharma and organizations like yourself heading in the next few years?
Yeah. I've been really watching this, and I will tell you personally, it all comes down to education, educating patients, educating the providers, educating the actual health systems and the hospitals. We, as a country, and I would say even as the world, we need to understand that we have to educate people on the nature of how we're treating ourselves, not only in what we eat, but also in medicine. You know, 50 years ago, the exploration of medicine was way different than it is now. I think that the science has changed, and we've seen that with discussion of more of a personal medicine, which we don't know what that looks like yet, but I can tell you that some of the movies that we've seen, like Star Wars and Star Trek, I think those ideas that they put in the movies, those writers, I think have really pushed us to look at medicine in a completely different way. We want to observe what works with patients and what doesn't work with patients. And there are many drugs that don't really work with patients. So we're still in that experimental phase. I think the FDA has a lot of work to do, you know, and there are politics involved, right? So what one person may believe is correct, the other one may not. So I think we still have a lot of work to do. I don't think that there's a silver bullet in healthcare, but it will take a meeting of the minds to understand that we have to help patients as much as possible at the right value for everyone, not only for the patient or providers or insurance companies, but also to the pharma companies that invest hundreds of billions of dollars to develop products. So there has to be a delicate balance.
I agree with you, and I think that it all goes down to taking the steps in the right direction. You know, there's so many critics, of ACA and, you know, all of the movements it had, and, you know, at least it was a movement. At least we got a little bit off the center console and moved a little bit to, well, I won't say right or left because our constituents on the listening may not like which direction I say we move, but we moved off the zero button and moved at least to 10 miles an hour and trying to get some speed to change. So every, you know, progress is a momentum. You know, whether it's a right or wrong momentum, at least there's awareness and moving, and, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, and so much of it's out of our control, we can only pray for the best.
That's one of my favorite words is momentum, and I absolutely agree. Regardless of where anyone sits politically, and we could talk for years about who's right or wrong, I think that it all comes down to what's in the best interest of the public. And whether ACA, ACHA, Obamacare, Trump care, whatever kind of care it is, it all comes down to what's the best for the majority of the patients. So I think that that will continue to evolve. I think their momentum is that we need to be better. I do think that the ACA jump-started, whether it was right or wrong or the good or bad or whatever opinion anyone wants, because, again, it may be good for some and may be bad for many others, but it was good for someone. So at the same time, it's hard to sit here and judge. I can tell you that our political process may not always work out the way we all want it to, but it is still a process that we have to believe in as Americans and support. So today, this week, I know that the Senate is working on the changes and there's all kinds of opinions, but ultimately there is momentum for change, and I think it's a change in the right direction as long as it's in the benefit of us.
Mm-hmm.
People.
You know, it's. I'd love your perspective on something because I have my theories, and I always love to ask leaders like yourself in the pharma world and in general in healthcare, the effect of social media on influencing thoughts, ideas, and action.
Tremendous.
Scary, actually.
Tremendous. It's actually scary to the point that I actually, and I'm not afraid of anything. I go on record of that. But I am afraid for our future and for our kids. I have a couple of that are already in college, and they're amazing boys, and I believe I've raised them the right way and to think the right way, right? But I will tell you that as we travel, right, is that we travel a lot, and we look, and we're at major cities and airports. I live in that fear. I don't know what the future holds. And the media has a humongous impact on that, as does television or cable and movies and shows. And I'm not going to get any kind of rhetoric. However, I am afraid for the future because I'm not sure the direction of our youth. The old guard has changed, and maybe there's some good in that. But at the same time, I do have some fear for our future, not only in healthcare, but just in our culture.
Yeah, I think that social media has both a positive and negative effect. It's that whole didactic of communication, you know, where I'm looking at you in the eye and you're looking at me in the eye and we're having a conversation. We are looking at the little inferences of, you know, did your body language change when I said this? You know, all the things growing up we were taught to learn,
yep,
you know, in our generation as influence to a situation, and you know, the reason I ask that is I take a look at some of the comments that are coming out to the senators and the House of Representatives about some of the changes in healthcare, and these are people that are expressing some of these comments will not come to a hearing or go to their local office and express those same comments. So it's almost like you want to say, if you can't tell it to someone in their face, you might want to think twice about whether you put that on Twitter and make yourself look like an idiot.
Absolutely agree. You and I, of course, agree. I think that there is an issue with that. We've lost that personalization of not only business, but of also of communication. And we all get caught up in it. Texting, email, okay, that's pretty good communication because it's in writing. For business, there's some really good about that. But there's nothing like even if you're on the phone,
right,
and talking to someone and understanding their voice, being in front of someone, I still believe in that. I travel almost every week. I love being in front of people. I love talking to people and understanding how I can help. What's the solution that I may have? Or is it something I can develop? Or maybe it's the opposite. How can you help me? And if you're not in front of someone, I just don't see how you can operate. The
Agreed.
This new world it's not our world, right? We're the last great generation, which I don't believe, because I think all generations have a greatness to them. But, you know, I want to make sure that we have free thinkers, but that are thinking themselves. They're not just thinking what someone else is telling them to think. So it is an interesting time.
Yeah, you know, when you take a look at, a patient, for example, from a patient journey's perspective, how important is it for you to meet the specialty pharmacies that you're partnering with to understand their cultures?
It's extremely important. And we also have learned that we may not fit everyone, not only from a product perspective, but also from a personality perspective. You have to be able to partner, keyword is partner, with people that you have a great understanding with. And we have some really phenomenal partnerships. I won't name any names, but at the same time, you could find it online. We have some great partnerships with specialty pharmacies and look to grow those relationships, A, because we believe in our products, and as do they, B, because I think specialty pharmacies and the creation of that market talks to the patient much more, especially not on the clinical side. We need to make sure that the patient is being taken care of correctly. Many years ago, we took a look at this as a group and said, okay, well, we need more clinical data, and we have more data now than we know what to do with. But that data is providing us with information that will provide better solutions for patients, and specialty pharmacy is where it sits because of what we call high touch, because of what we call data and interaction with the patient and the provider. I think today is the best time ever to provide service to patients, not only with the pharma, but also from the pharmacy perspective. So I absolutely think that specialty pharmacies are an integral part of our world.
I agree. So if I'm a new specialty pharmacy, and we have many listeners that are thinking about going into specialty pharmacy and working with organizations like yourself to prove their value and provide services for patients, what's important for you in a specialty partner? What should they be thinking about when they're working with pharma in general in being able to meet the needs of a patient population?
Well, I would say A, like any business, and I tend to be an A-plus personality, is be open. You know, be open to ideas, be open to the partnership possibilities. We have met in the past with some groups that maybe were closed or were used to doing things a certain way. Be open, because especially someone that's new or thinking about moving into specialty pharmacy, I think that because of competition, you have to be open to ideas and to fostering growth within your organization by partnering with the correct types of companies, regardless of what type of specialty pharmacy you will be. Because there are so many different types of specialty pharmacies today, whether it's oncology or infusion care or rheumatoid arthritis or, you know, any of the, you know, Hep C or any of the other disease states. I think you have to be open. And I think pharma responds to companies that are open to ideas.
You're absolutely right. So your team out in the marketplace, as they're working with you and working with patients and pharmacies and so forth, what's important for you to have as you're building your culture internally? A lot of our clients like to hear stories about organizations, especially in great growth stages like yourself, and you've had such great success over the past few years under your leadership since you've taken over. What do you look for in attracting the right people to join your team and build and moving your business initiatives along?
Well, I will tell you, I want people that are honest. I want hardworking, honest people, because there are many that I've run into that are not honest. So, and I think that's critical for anyone. I want people that can take it, meaning that, yes, every now and then you will get beat up because we're not perfect. I want people that are willing to learn and willing to listen. And you know what? I have that. I would put my team up against any team in the entire market. We have such a passionate team that, we're not always all smiles, but it's all because of the passion that we want to be the best and we want to be everywhere. So I think sometimes we're our own worst enemy because we're so passionate and we want it so bad that, sometimes, we may get a little aggressive, but that's okay. I love aggressive.
It's funny you should say that because I think sometimes passion for someone that is more of a, I wouldn't say stoic, but more of an introvert, when you come across someone like yourself and me for that matter as well, and our firm is very much like yours, very passionate, very focused, want to do the right things right, it can come across as being pushy when all it is you're just trying to get your message across because you want to
right.
be successful.
Listen, right.
I never forget it. A couple years back, one of our first consulting clients, we launched it. You know, we did a presentation, and I sat down, and he looked at me, and he's like, because of my 60 years of business, he says, if I had to give one presentation like that, he goes, I probably would have quit. I have no idea where you got that passion, but could you give me some of it? And he's like, do you ever get told that you're pushy? And I'm like, well, I think that's a good thing, if you believe in something, but there is a fine line,
Right. Yeah. And I know, and we know, and that's okay. I think, again, open, honest, and if you can develop a relationship with someone, they're going to get you.
Right.
And that's the key piece, even in our, I'm going to talk, on the PBM world, the ones that...
Ooh, the four-letter word.
Right. So we're working with the ones that are open, and we're working with some of the largest ones, and they're open, right? And as a small and growing company, there is nothing more important in the marketplace today than being able to work with the payers. And,
correct.
And I will tell you, we're really aggressive. Sometimes we have come across this, and we've been told we're a little too aggressive, but that's okay because without them, we can't succeed, and we all know that.
And, that's smart that you realize that because I think there is a, doing a lot of work at AMCP like I do, I actually kind of, first of all, as a consultancy, we have to be Switzerland. We have to listen to all sides and, make our recommendations. But at AMCP, being able to see payers sit in the same room with manufacturers and have discussions on, okay, you want value-based reimbursement. Please tell me what that definition means to you. Because to me, as a manufacturer, it may mean this, and to you as a payer, it may mean this. So how do we come across, how do we get together and come up with a collaborative approach that's going to move the momentum again and help patients be successful and have better outcomes? So, Carlos, I'm curious, again, speaking about payers and things that you've been successful with, where do you see the shift happening in the next 5 years? And if I'm a manufacturer that's listening, to you as a CEO of another manufacturing firm, what do I need to kind of keep my eyes open for in the next 5 years, in your humble opinion?
The shifting will continue. I believe that today we have what's called value-based contracting. I'm not sure anyone really knows what that is at this point. And it's going to increase. I believe that in the future, insurance companies and their PBMs will have to move towards partnerships. And we're seeing some of it today. We saw it with the Hep C drugs. But I don't foresee it much change because change may not be good for everyone. At this point, the model has worked for many years, despite a minority of people saying it doesn't work. The majority of people think it works.
Mm-hmm.
That may not benefit small companies like me.
Mm-hmm.
Big pharma, big companies, I think, have an understanding that it works, right? They've been in partnership for many years. I think the entry point will be being able to develop a relationship and being able to sit down and understand the value of your product to the patient and how it benefits everyone. And I think that is the bottom line. If you don't have an audience, then you cannot tell a story. And everyone wants to hear the right story. And you have to be able to be diligent in your product development, because if you have a product that does not help a patient more than hurt them, you already have one strike.
Right.
So I find better medicine coming.
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's going to be more precision medicine. You know, when you take a look at the whole population, I was up at a major health system in the Northeast, and, you know, as we were looking at building out their specialty pharmacy services, we started talking about their population health program. And, you know, it was very intriguing to me to hear some of the things that they were doing and the modeling and the molding and all that. So I think things have to change, but at what point do they change enough? And I don't think any of us have that crystal ball. Otherwise, we'd be billionaires and you and I wouldn't be talking right now. We'd be off in some wonderful location.
Or I will say living in Miami is not too bad.
No, it isn't. It isn't. It's not bad at all. It's tough on the eyes with all the beautiful water and scenery down there. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with our audience today. We really enjoyed learning a little bit more about yourself and the great success that you've had building your organization, and more importantly, the steps that you've put in place to make sure that you have a patient-centric approach in everything that you do at your organization. And I can't thank you enough for putting the patients first.
Thank you, Suzette. This has been great, and anytime.
Perfect.
Best words, and thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
Hi, this is Suzette DiMasio, the president and founder of CSI Specialty Group. Do you want to build the ultimate specialty pharmacy sales team? You can now with the help of CSI University's online sales training, built from the ground floor up to help unlock the potential of specialty pharmacy sales teams of all shapes, sizes, geographies, specialties, and areas of focus. This program was built with you in mind. Our training is available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and can be completed anywhere you have an internet connection, either in your office or from the comfort of one of your sales reps' homes. Graduates of CSI University will earn a specialty sales certification and be able to put a shareable badge on LinkedIn and much more. Please check out csigroup.net for complete details. Again, it's csigroup.net/university, and start building the ultimate specialty pharmacy sales team today.
Thanks for listening to the Specialty Pharmacy Podcast. If there's anything we mentioned in today's show you missed, don't worry. We take the show notes for you at csigroup.net/podcast. If you're not already a subscriber, please consider pressing the subscribe button on our podcast player so you never miss one of our future episodes. And if you haven't given us a rating or a review on iTunes yet, please find a spare minute and help us reach and educate even more of our specialty pharmacy peers. The Specialty Pharmacy Podcast is a production of CSI Specialty Group, your go-to firm for all things specialty pharmacy. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Doctor's Orders.